This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Bingeworthy, a podcast dedicated to telling you which of the many dozens of streaming shows that are being thrown at you each week and month are worth your time and attention. Hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo, and today I get to talk to you about another very juicy mystery drama that's coming to Peacock on March 14th. That one's called Apples Never Fall. The show is based on Leanne Moriarty's novel of the same name and follows a family named the Delaneys, who are basically upstanding figures in their community, led by the mother and father of the family, the matriarch and patriarch, played by Annette Bening and Sam Neill, both of whom are former tennis stars. And as they head into retirement and sell off their country club, Annette's character suddenly goes missing, which sets off a chain reaction of revelations for basically all of the family members trying to piece together the case. The show also stars Allison Brie, Jake Lacy, Georgia Flood, and more. Joining me to discuss the series is the one, the only Sam Neill himself. You, of course, know Sam from his role as Dr. Alan Grant in the Jurassic Park films. He's also in Taika Waititi's Hunt for the Wilder People. He's in the Taika Waititi Thor films. He plays the actor Odin with Matt Damon and Luke Hemsworth. He's in Event Horizon. He's in Peaky Blinders, Daybreakers, In the Mouth of Madness. So many more excellent pieces of work. We dive into his entry point into Apples Never Fall, which, if I haven't mentioned it, it's quite good, and I wouldn't be surprised if all of you White Lotus and Big Little Lies fans just eat this one up. It starts as kind of the central mystery of what happened to Joy Delaney, and then dives really a lot deeper into the complex issues that go into family dynamics, especially a family as flawed as the Delaneys. But like I said, if you're into White Lotus or Big Little Lies or like Nine Perfect Strangers, what was it, The Undoing, Sharp Objects, those kind of pieces, I think you'll find a lot to love in this one. During my interview with Sam, we dive into, obviously, Apples Never Fall, working with his amazing co-stars that he has here, binge-worthy television. We talk about Jurassic Park, Event Horizon, of course, his John Carpenter movies, because I am a huge Carpenter guy, so you just know that I had to bring those films up. Unsurprisingly, Sam was just as sweet as can be. He really is a complete 180 from the character he plays in the show, who is extremely vicious at times and, sharp and downright mean to some of his children. Before we get to my chat with the great Sam Neill, I've got to tell you that Bingeworthy is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes the Playlist Podcast, The Discourse, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Follow, like, subscribe, drop us a rating on any of those as we greatly appreciate it. Or just head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, interviews, reviews, and more. As a reminder to our listeners, all episodes of Apples Never Fall drop for your binging pleasure on March 14th, only on Peacock. Okay, here's my chat with the wonderful Sam Neill. Thank you. Mike D'Angelo with the playlist here to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Vivid Storm. Since 2004, Vivid Storm has been a technology brand focused on one thing, upgrading the home theater and event experience through technological innovation. The brand provides high-quality film and television equipment products such as conference, projection screens, home theater screens and cabinets, school teaching and training venue products, and event equipment to their customers. I personally own their 100-inch floor-rising ambient light rejecting screen with a motorized Monte Carlo cabinet. It's in my home theater with my ultra short throw 4K projector, and it is amazing. Not only just the aesthetics of it all, but the image quality is excellent. If you want a home theater with real wow factor, look no further. Vivid Storm can be a one-stop shop to bundle your screen, cabinet, and projector in one place, making it easy to go from a small TV setup to a full immersive home theater experience. Head on over to the playlist.net's page for this episode to look at my home theater setup and links to Vivid Storm's current sales. Vivid Storm for your dream picture. Sam, it's an honor and a privilege to speak with you today. Really huge fan. Obviously, like many people of my generation, we grew up watching movies with you in them. So it's an absolute privilege to speak with you.
Thank you so much.
So this series that you're jumping onto here, where do you kind of connect with it? As far as, does someone approach you for it, or are you just, you know, you hear about the property, are you pursuing it?
Look, I'm interested in, you're under the banner of binge-worthy, and I think this is something we've all discovered in the last 3 or 4 years, particularly during the COVID time, that there are a few things more satisfying than something that's really binge-worthy. And a lot of television has been, I don't know, underwhelming up until recently, you know, the crime of the week and stuff like that, which caused me to tears.
me too.
But a self-contained story like this that you really want to know what's, that you really need to binge and you really want to know what's going to happen next, is an odd gift. It comes from this multiplication of platforms, and it is fantastic sort of competition between these different organizations to produce something that you do not want to turn off. And that's what really turned me onto this show. It's 7 hours. It's curious. It's usually kind of like 6 or 8 or something like that, which seems about right. And it means that you've got a long form story that plays out. You've got plenty of time to establish character and all the different quirks that go with being a flawed, in my case, a very flawed character. and the gradual, peeling away of those leaves is something that's, and the unveiling of the central mystery is something a pleasure to work with, and hopefully a great pleasure to watch.
Right. You're the patriarch of the family, and he's very multifaceted. I guess you could call him human, you know, in that way, but at one point you might be really enjoying him, and at another one you might be like absolutely detesting him. So is that one of the things that really drew you to Stan, or was there kind of another aspect, you know, that sparked your interest?
Yeah, I think, look, that's the great thing about Stan. He's a very, very complicated character. And like so many people, something happened to him at a young age, and it means that he is indeed multifaceted. He's alpha male. He's this dominant. He's the big dog in the yard kind of thing. What I loved is that he's also vulnerable. He loves his family ferociously. He is ridiculously prone to human error. he has a short temper, and he can be ridiculously, laughably absurd. And that's very human. You know, I think he'd be difficult to live with, it'd be difficult to be married to, it'd be difficult as a father, but he's also, you sort of understand these things because humans are complex, and this is a complex man in a very complex family, and that's what long-form television gives you the opportunity to explore.
Yeah, there seems to be this modern fascination with these types of like murder or disappearance mysteries, many of which are about groups of people that, you know, they seemingly have it all on the surface, much like your family does. What would you say that says about us, that we're always coming back to these stories where it's like, what's underneath the surface of these people that have it all together? Is it like an insane jealousy or something other than that?
I wouldn't say a jealousy in this case, because they're not particularly privileged people, but
they definitely seem that way from the outside.
I suppose they seem like happy families. that is true, but they're not filthy rich or anything like that. Look, I think they're a very relatable family. I think mm-hmm. you know, there's something about these people that we recognize something of ourselves in one or another of these characters, or if not more of them. It's a very sort of diverse family, even though they've been brought up under the straitjacket of Stan's dire coaching ways. Yeah, I sort of love them all, and yeah. and that was true in life too. We were a very close bunch, and we got on really well. They made me, all those people, they made me laugh. Annette is the warmest human being imaginable. Yeah, they're all really funny people. I dug them.
Yeah, Annette, Allison, Jake, you know, Essie, Connor, they're all really great in the show. Like you said, you were able to get along, you know, right off the bat. Were you guys able to kind of like have bonding sessions or anything? Or at this point, they're just like throwing you in and you're a little bit off, but that's kind of part of the dynamic. So maybe play into that.
Yeah, you get thrown in, and that's helped. I always think if you want a close cast, and I do, it's always good to be on locations, and no one was living at home. We were all living under the same circumstances. So we'd hang out, and we became a substitute family, and we just enjoyed each other's company immensely. And you don't really get that if you're working in LA, because half the people are going home at night. And it's like an ordinary day job. This isn't a day job. This is so much more involving.
Well, they don't want me to go into spoilers, so I'll just say expect twists and turns and, you know, all kinds of things for each character. But because of that, if you'll indulge my fandom a bit, I would love to speak with you about some of the other stuff you've done. I am an absolutely massive fan of John Carpenter. I'm wearing a shirt here today right now.
Are you up?
I have a John Carpenter collection, you know, and you got to work with him a couple of times on Memoirs, and then In the Mouth of Madness, which I rewatched recently, still holds up. How do you look back at those collaborations and in working with John in general?
I'm very fond of John. There's something about there's something about horror directors, you know, that they tend to be the most lovable people on earth and the least scary. And John Carpenter is absolutely like that. There's not a dark bone in his body, and he's also deeply eccentric. He just eats breakfast three times a day. I tried to take him out for the best Chinese restaurant in Vancouver, and he couldn't eat a thing. There was not one thing on the menu that he could possibly eat. He likes diner food, and that's it. But particularly in The Mouth of Madness, Memoirs of an Invisible Man was a slightly crazy film, because Chevy and John did not get on well, and that made for a slightly fraught atmosphere on set. But John and I got on really well, and when we were doing Memoirs, it was just fun from beginning to end. And he loves slightly bent things, you know, and he gave me lots of room to work with. And if I suggested something, he would gladly listen to it. When at the beginning, you see me locked away in what was known as the lunatic asylum in those days.
Yes.
And I'm in a straitjacket, and he said, you know, we torture people in this place by playing the Rolling Stones all day. I said, no, John, what would torture me is if you played the Carpenters 24/7.
Yes.
And he said, that's a great idea. So if there's one thing I take credit for in that film, it is the carpenters as torture.
Yeah. So they are so welcome for that fee that they got for that film. That's one that really has grown in appreciation with the fans over the years. Another one that's really caught on is Event Horizon, which I threw on today while I was prepping. And man, that is a crazy movie. Like, it keeps gathering more diehard fans as time goes on. Is that one that you saw that happening with, or were you like, I don't know about this one when you were making it?
I loved making it. It was crazy dark time. And I loved making it. I thought the cut was a little bit rushed, you know, which disappointed me initially, because I think with horror like that, it's the things you don't see. It's the things you can't hear. It's the things that lurk in the darkness that are the scariest. And I thought the cut sort of took away a bit of that tension. But nevertheless, it seems to have survived well. And yeah, I got a lot of fan stuff for it. And the other film that I made long before that, I think in 1980, another
Possession?
Possession, yeah. And Possession, which was completely unremarked at the time, it seems to have come into its own. And again, there's this fanatical base that follows that film, and I'm very fond of that film too. I think it's a sort of, albeit flawed, it is a masterpiece of kinds.
It's a great movie. Another absolutely perfect movie, one that you probably get mentioned in every interview, Jurassic Park. Of course, I have to mention it. I was 8 years old when that came out, so obviously that goes deep with me. You finally got the whole gang back together in the last one. Are you satisfied with where Alan Grant is at, or would you kind of want to jump back on with this one that David Koepp is writing?
Well, David Koepp's always interesting, but I know no more than you do. I just know what's on social media.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought Alien Grant kissing under the wing of that plane at the end, that felt like a sign off. I don't know. It's the JP franchise has been very kind to me, and I'm full of gratitude for it. As for its future, I have no idea at all.
Yeah. You also have worked multiple times with Taika Waititi. I love Hunt for the Wilder People. Plus, you get to, you know, just jump into the MCU in probably one of the most fun, breezy ways, which is just playing an actor. I imagine those days with Taika and like Matt Damon and Luke Hemsworth, those have to be pretty fun and easy days, right?
Yeah, it's to work with a Hemsworth and Damon in the tiniest parts, taking the piss out of Anthony Hopkins and things. I mean, who would have imagined that? I have no idea. But I love Taika, and I'm sure we'll do some more. You know,
I hope so. Hunt for the Wilder People, like I said, great movie. We're also living in this age of sequels and IP, as you know. Obviously, you've gotten to return to Jurassic Park, but are there any other characters where you're like, man, I would have loved to have another crack at that one?
You know, speaking of binge, I did a series called, a J.J. Abrams series called Alcatraz a few years ago. Oh. So I'm just reminded of that. And here's a case where a binge thing could have been really handy, because the network decided that it needed to be crime of the week thing. So there had to be a mystery that had to be solved every week. But the overarching story, I thought, was really intriguing. I loved the idea of all these hardcore criminals somehow being resurrected. It was a very dark story. We rebuilt the prison and all that kind of thing. But I think it was kind of ruined by having to have a weekly story. If that had been long form television, it could have been really memorable, but it wasn't.
Yeah, a couple more years, maybe it would have been a little different. But
yeah, and make it the big story rather than the crime of the week.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, they're giving me the wrap. I'll just say for our listeners, all 7 episodes of Apples Never Fall drop on Peacock on March 14th. Sam is unsurprisingly amazing in it, like he is in everything. Sam, I really, really appreciate your time, man. Big fan.
Thank you much.
Bingeworthy is brought to you by The Playlist. Founded in 2007 by Rodrigo Perez, The Playlist is a leading film and television website offering smart yet accessible news, analysis, critical takes, and more for the film community at large, from moviegoers to entertainment industry players to the modern-day binge-happy viewer. Head on over to theplaylist.net for all of our film and TV news, reviews, podcasts, features, and more.